From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie. Welcome to the world's most listened to late-night talk show, Coast to Coast AM, and thank you for inviting me tonight into your homes or as part of your dashboard in your car or truck. Happy St. Paddy's Day, by the way. Some of the news of the day, then we'll get right into what we're doing tonight. An incredible story out of Illinois. U.S. federal officials have confirmed that they are investigating an incident where three men were studying and taking pictures of Chicago Sears Tower. The men were spotted outside the 110-story building by security guards about 3 weeks ago. But guess what? The men were questioned and allowed to leave. But the guards notified Chicago police. They in turn notified the terrorism task force. The guards recorded the car's license plate, and it was, of course, from a rental agency where the car was apparently returned about an hour after the incident. It was later determined that it had been rented with a fictional name, according to sources. Also, within the last 3 weeks, a man was questioned about sketching the Boeing world headquarters as well. A Democratic senator says that he'll prevent an executive with a Dubai-owned company from being appointed head of the agency that oversees ports here in the United States until he's sure the company is selling all of its U.S. port operations to an American buyer. President Bush in January nominated David Sanborn, DP World's Director of Operations for Europe and Latin America, to head the Maritime Administration. Shortly after the nomination, DP World's planned purchase of a company that runs major U.S. port facilities became the center of a political controversy, as you know. DP World did complete its purchase of the London-based Peninsular and Oriental Steam Navigation Company, but DP World has since agreed to sell its U.S. port operations to a U.S. company within 6 months if it doesn't take a financial hit. Senator Bill Nelson of Florida said he would hold the nomination until he knew more about Sanborn's role in the process that allowed DP World to purchase the port operations in the first place. On the coasttocoastam.com website, under Hot Stories, the Pentagon planning to use cyber insects. That's right. They want to create an army of cyber insects that can remotely check out explosives and send transmissions. The idea is to insert microsystems into the insects that can integrate them into their body so they can be remotely controlled later. A similar scheme aimed at manipulating wasps failed when they flew off to feed and mate. Chiron Corporation and Italian drug authorities are withholding and withdrawing now the company's vaccine for measles, mumps, and rubella from the market after it was linked to a higher rate of side effects than similar products. Chiron has suffered losses in recent years after two seasonal flu vaccines were temporarily pulled from the market due to manufacturing problems. It is now withdrawing its vaccine, which includes weakened versions of the viruses that cause measles, mumps, and rubella, because it was associated with a higher rate of reported cases of fever, reactions, and swollen glands than competing vaccines in drug monitoring studies by Italian health authorities. The vaccine is a minor contributor to Chiron's annual product sales of more than $1.4 billion and is sold only outside of the United States. While you may be one of these owners of the Philips Electronics plasma television sets, 12,000 of them in the United States, flat screen panel plasma sets, are liable to overheating, so what Philips is going to do is send a repairman to your house to try to fix this. 12,000 of the 42-inch and 50-inch plasma television sets are affected. And an earthquake measuring 6.4 on the Richter scale rocked Indonesia's islands this week, triggering a small tsunami that killed at least two people, left three others missing. Earth changes are happening very, very fast, and in a moment, we'll check in with Linda Moulton Howe about these changes and about melting ice and how it's contributing to a rising sea level. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, and I want to get right into the story with our Linda Moulton Howe, the Emmy Award-winning television producer and investigative reporter. Earth's ice is melting very fast. Sea levels are rising. Linda went out to cover this story for us and has come back with some startling information. Hi, Linda. Take it away.
Yes, George, that is right. To give a little perspective, over the past 100 years, our planet's global average temperature has increased 1 degree Fahrenheit. In 2005, that average surface temperature was 58.3 degrees Fahrenheit, the hottest year on record ever in modern human history. In fact, the last time that the Earth was this warm is estimated to be at least 10,000 years ago or longer. Some scientists think the last time was the Pliocene 3 million years ago. By the end of this century, the average global surface temperature is projected to increase perhaps another 3 degrees Fahrenheit and maybe as much as 10 degrees Fahrenheit, depending on CO2 and methane increases in the atmosphere. And that means over the next several decades, the Earth's global average temperature could rise at least 3 times more than last century. And some people argue the cause is natural variability of our planet wobbling around the sun and not the human industrial revolution. However, I have talked with a scientist who does ice core investigations of historic climate changes, and he says the hard evidence is that this planet's wobble distance and polar tilt have been farther from the sun for a very long time, not closer. He also says that in Antarctic ice cores, which go back nearly a million years, none of the ice layers show CO2 levels as high as they are now in 2006, which is 381 parts per million volume, and climbing. In fact, 2005 saw the single largest increase in CO2 on record, and we're going to hear more from that ice core scientist in the second half hour. But right now, I would like to begin with the ice meltdown all over this planet that is happening faster than anyone expected. The meltdown includes Greenland, Antarctica, mountain glaciers, and the Arctic. But tonight, I'm focusing on the latest science reports from Antarctica, Greenland, and Mount Kilimanjaro, ice that's on land, melting into the oceans, and raising sea levels. And I'm going to start with that massive ice sheet of Greenland, which covers more than 650,000 square miles. In some places, the ice is 2 miles thick. If it all melted into the ocean, sea levels around the world would rise 23 feet. In February, NASA and university scientists reported that Greenland's southern glaciers are melting twice as fast as they did only 10 years ago. In fact, the southern Greenland glaciers are among the world's fastest. They're moving at 8 miles a year, dumping into the Atlantic Ocean so much water that it's now equivalent to 225 times what the big city of Los Angeles uses in a year.
Jeez.
I know. And that ice melt is accelerating so much that it could double again by 2015. That's only 9 years from now. Global warming computer models have not had this kind of rapid meltdown data before in their entire scenario for Greenland. So now they're crunching new data. Sea level rise projection is probably going to go up over the next decades. Professor Jason Box, PhD at the Byrd Polar Research Center at Ohio State University in Columbus, has been repeatedly visiting Greenland over the past decade. Recently, he returned from another trip, and he told me he was surprised by the current melt in the southern glaciers. Here now is Professor Bach.
In going to Greenland, I was never expecting the changes to occur as rapidly as they have. I've been going there for more than 12 years each year, but what has made these glaciers accelerate beyond any recent observations is the warming that has gone on around Greenland that's well documented in temperature records at coastal stations. The melting is occurring for a longer period of time, so the glaciers are flowing faster, longer. Greenland is already contributing significantly to sea level rise. Our best estimate right now is that Greenland contributes about one-third of the global sea level rise. And so at the end of this century, at 2100, we expect sea levels to be 2 to 3 feet higher than today. How much the sea level rises, of course, depends on the warming patterns. Another way to think of this is that more than 100 million people globally live within 3 feet of vertical sea level. So millions of people can be affected by sea level rise. Another large population that's threatened by sea level rise is in Bangladesh. They don't really have higher ground in that nation, and more than 100 million people live there.
Where are they going to go? Will governments be able to handle this crisis?
Unfortunately, we're already committed to a significant sea level rise, given that we have already increased our greenhouse effect, the amount of carbon dioxide, by almost 40% now above pre-industrial levels. That increase in the greenhouse effect will cause warming that hasn't yet fully kicked in. Right now, the oceans are absorbing about 15 times the heat that land is. The ocean total heat content has really gone up dramatically. Very reasonable models suggest a point of irreversibility for Greenland exists at a warming of between 2 and 3 degrees, and we're already looking at a warming of about 2, maybe 3 degrees. It seems that if this irreversibility point exists, that we're getting frightfully close to it.
And once we are there, then what you're saying is Greenland continues to melt down.
Yes, at the point of irreversibility, even over the course of a cold year, it's possible that the ice sheet would still be losing mass.
Joining Greenland in meltdown is Antarctica, especially that West Antarctic ice sheet. It's not only melting more rapidly than expected, its ice shelves are very unstable as the ocean water around them is heating up. If all the West Antarctic ice sheet broke up and slid into the ocean, worldwide sea levels would rise 20 feet. So in some distant future, if all the Greenland and West Antarctic ice melts into the oceans, global sea levels would rise at least 43 feet. Using two NASA satellites, scientists from the University of Colorado have made the first study of total mass balance of the entire Antarctic ice and found it to be, quote, in significant decline, unquote. It's melting at the rate of 36 cubic miles a year. One of the project leaders on the Antarctic satellite study is John Warr, PhD and professor of physics at the University of Colorado and fellow at the Cooperative Institute for Research in Environmental Sciences in Boulder. Antarctic glaciers began moving more rapidly into the ocean in recent years after some ice shelves melted and broke up, releasing those glaciers. Here now is Professor Warr.
And as soon as they break up, then the glaciers are free to move more rapidly into the ocean. And evidently, that is tied to global warming in the sense that they're floating ice shelves. As they get the water around the ice shelves warmer, they come in underneath the ice shelves. There's now warmer water underneath the ice. It tends to accelerate the melting, and pretty soon the ice shelf's gone. And what our results show is that that increase is evidently dominating over the increase in snowfall. We found that the total loss of mass of the Antarctic ice sheet between 2002 and 2005 has been enough to raise sea level by 0.4 millimeters per year. Another way to think of it, if you covered all of the state of California with water, that's enough water every year to reach a depth of 14 inches, a little more than a foot, over the entire state.
And that much is going into the ocean?
Every year, that much, at least for the last 3 years, that much went into the ocean. That's equivalent to 36 cubic miles of ice.
Which is a lot. I think somebody compared it to a Lake Tahoe going into the ocean every year.
That's exactly what it is. The issue is that going to continue and, in fact, maybe accelerate? Where this is probably coming from, well, where we know it's coming from, is West Antarctica beneath South America. And that's a very unstable place because the ice there is resting on bedrock that is beneath sea level.
If that entire West Antarctic ice mass went into the ocean, breaking up, how high would sea level rise?
It would rise by about 20 feet.
Globally?
Globally, that's right. Of course, this is not going to happen over a few years. At the present rate, it would take thousands of years. What we have to worry about is this an indication that things are really starting to happen and shake loose down there?
Okay, Linda.
While there is still a lot of ice left to melt in Antarctica and Greenland, the glaciers on top of Earth's mountains, ranging from the Himalayas to South America and Africa, are melting so fast that many are expected to disappear in the next 10 to 15 years. In fact, the famous and once glistening white glaciers atop Mount Kilimanjaro in Tanzania, Africa, will be completely gone in less than a decade. Dr. Lonnie Thompson, distinguished professor of geology and research scientist at Ohio State University's Byrd Polar Research Center, has been traveling to mountain glaciers for 20 years to monitor their decline. He is discouraged by the rapid melt of ice that for centuries has provided fresh water for humans and animals all over this planet. When the mountain glaciers are gone, what will replace that water? What happens to crops? Climate refugees, both human and animal, will be forced to migrate as this globally warming century unfolds. But to where and at what cost? Professor Thompson.
I believe that if you look at glaciers in their big scheme of things, they're one of our temperature regulators for the planet. Mountain glaciers, these big ice sheets, a lot of heat is being taken up in the melting of those ice fields. But as those ice fields get smaller, they become less effective in taking up that heat. So we're losing, well, I believe, one of our balancing mechanisms that we have in our climate system.
So the more we melt, the faster we melt.
Yes, we just returned from Kilimanjaro on February 6th, 2006. This was my third trip to this mountain so that we could determine how much ice has been lost over the 5 years since we did this last time. And we were amazed at the changes in the ice during the time we were on the top of the mountain, but also just in comparing the aerial photographs from 2000 to 2006. It's clear that they are on track for disappearing. And we believe that when we actually do the numbers, we will be able to show that the rate of losses has actually accelerated.
And if it has accelerated, what is the earliest date that there will no longer be any snow on Mount Kilimanjaro?
As far as the timing of when they will disappear, that's an interesting question. In 2003, for the first time that we have any record of, there was an observed along the side of the Furtwängler Glacier, a lake actually bursting out of the side of that ice field. Since 2000, melting has started to occur. And ice is a threshold system. It's pretty stable if the temperatures are below freezing. But as they rise above freezing and you get the formation of water, then you change the albedo. There's less energy being reflected from the surface, more radiation being absorbed, and you get into this positive feedback. It's quite possible that they will disappear much quicker.
I think 2015 is one of the projected years, and that's only 9 years away.
9 years away, yeah. And as these ice bodies shrink, then there's more and more of the crater floor being exposed and more solar radiation being absorbed, which dries up the temperature and leads to more ice melt and a quicker acceleration in the rate of loss. It's very clear that these ice fields are going to disappear.
Right.
And then you need to know, what is the impact for these people?
And there are 37 million people now living in Tanzania, George, 67 million projected by 2050. What happens to the climate refugees who are going to be forced by something unprecedented so far, which is no ice of any kind on Tanzania, Mount Tanzania, within 9 years? I don't think people thought we were ever going to live to see it in our lifetimes. It is happening already. And when we come back on the other side of the break, I have fascinating insights from this man who has studied ice cores, looks at the wobbles of the Earth, and has some insights. And some he is very, very concerned about the rate of ice melt.
Linda, I understand that John Kerry, former presidential candidate, is saying that by 2036, interesting year, by the way, that's the one we talk about, John Teeter, the time traveler. But he says if global warming is not combated, especially from the United States' angle, that Boston and New York City will be destroyed due to flooding by 2036. That's pretty startling. That's not too far away.
Right. And that, again, comes back to this issue of how fast could this ice melt accelerate from the positive feedback that the more it melts, the faster it melts, the more it melts, and around we go.
Stay with us. Linda Moulton Howe will be back in just a moment to finish up on her ice core research investigation. And then next hour, she'll stay with us with what I call Conversations with Linda before we get into open lines a little bit later on tonight. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, it's time to shout out a little early to everybody listening to Coast tonight. Glad to have you with us. Those of you listening on your favorite radio stations, our dear Streamlink members that call themselves the Coast Riders when the program's on because they do a live chat while the show's going. Also, the NighthawkZone.com folks, hi to you. Fantastic Forum, Imaginative Worlds folks, and those from the Sorcery IRC, Yahoo Chat Clubs, the National Radio Club, and so many other groups that keep forming every week as they listen to a very fast and rapidly growing Coast to Coast AM. Back in a moment with Linda Moulton Howe. Don't touch that dial. You know, it's split, Linda. Some people think that man is creating most of this global warming that's causing what is exactly going on now, these rising levels. I've always believed that we're in a cycle that just can't be stopped. What's your take on all of this?
Well, we're going to hear from a man who does this for a living, and I thought it would be helpful to you and to the Coast audience to go to my news website, www.earthfiles.com, and the top headline about this ice melt and sea level rise has a very good combination of photographs, one taken in 2000 and one taken in 2006, that shows the change on Mount Kilimanjaro, which is a metaphor to Professor Thompson and others that it is happening so rapidly, that this once glistening ice cap that has been romanticized in books and has provided water for that area for so long, the cap will be gone. And it's not an if, it's not a maybe, it will be gone. And when you look at those photographs at earthfiles.com, it really brings it home. And it's not the only example. There are contrasts all around the world now where there was thick ice and water that provided fresh water for populations and animals over the last century that are now also disappearing. And before we go into this issue of natural orbital changes in relationship to the Earth orbiting around the sun, I'd like to just make a couple of more points from Professor Thompson, because energy is clearly one of the driving needs on this planet everywhere. And Brazil has taken one possible solution to a lot of its energy demands, and that is it's been growing a lot of crops to make a methanol that can go into machines, and that people are beginning to talk about that around the world. But as he pointed out, if you take the huge demands for energy and you tried to grow crops to just for that, you are then competing within your own nation for the food production for expanding populations. That is an issue that China has. And Professor Thompson was pointing out that the 1.3 billion people there now need an increasing, the slide, the graph keeps going up. They need more and more food and energy. And that another factor now, this changing climate around the world, is bringing drought to big parts of that nation in North Korea, and that there are places in China where the water table has been dropping a meter a year since the 1980s. And currently, both China and North Korea have what the scientists are calling a fifth season. It goes beyond winter, spring, summer, and fall, and it's now the dust season, and that's in the spring. It is so bad that people have to wear masks, schools can be canceled, people can't go shopping, and as Professor Thompson said, what happens if the dust bowls keep expanding, threatening water and food supplies to that enormous population?
This is war. I'm telling you, there will be wars fought for drinking water.
This is really the future ahead of us is actually Katrina may have given us the first glimpse, because depending upon how rapidly this goes, even if we have a 3 feet level, sea level rise over the next 90 years, it with every foot that it goes up, you have the surge, the storm surges go in further. And eventually, if you have 100 million people living within 3 feet vertical rise of where the sea level is now, and sea level is projected to keep rising no matter what, at least a couple of feet and possibly 3 feet, you are going to have people moving because there will be constant flooding.
Keep an eye on insurance companies, because as they stop to insure, it's because they're aware of something. So right. Just monitor that in the not too distant future.
Well, we've got this 2006 hurricane season year. What happens, George, if we have another Katrina or two Katrinas? This is a huge question mark as we start moving into the next couple of months. And as the Earth is warming up, there are people who will argue that the, quote, real cause of global warming is the sun or a natural variation in the Earth's orbit around the sun. Well, about this sun's role, I talked this week with David Hathaway. He's a PhD, and he's a leader in the solar physics group at NASA Marshall Space Flight Center in Huntsville, Alabama. And even though the last couple of years the sun had some extraordinarily strong X flares while it was supposed to be at solar minimum, the past few months the sun has behaved normally. Sunspot numbers are low as they should be, and there has been no substantial measured increase in solar energy that could be linked to this warming of the Earth, according to Dr. Hathaway. Well, what about the Earth's tilt and wobbling motion as it moves around the sun in an orbit that is not perfectly circular? I got a reality check on this from Dr. Richard Alley. He is professor of geosciences at Pennsylvania State University and University Park, and for years he has been studying the Earth's climate through ice cores, while he keeps in mind the three orbital cycle variations of our Earth, which can bring the northern hemisphere either closer or further away from the sun. And here now is Professor Allen.
One is how round the orbit is about the sun. It's elliptical, but it takes about 100,000 years to go from squashed to round to squashed. Then there is a tip of the North Pole. Does it sort of lean over so that the North Pole can get a sunburn, or does it stand straight up so the North Pole can't get a sunburn? And that tip varies over about 41,000 years. Mm-hmm. And then there's a wobble. Because the orbit is squashed rather than round, do we have northern hemisphere summer, which is when the bald spot on top is pointed at the sun? Do we have northern hemisphere summer when we're close to the sun or when we're far from the sun? And so you go from having northern hemisphere summer close to having it far and back over about 19 to 23,000 years. It's not perfect periodicity. There's sort of a wobble in it. So the three of these are all going on together, and these are the factors that have paced the ice ages. So the reason why we go from a world with little ice to a lot of ice and back has been these variations. When the northern land gets very little summer sun, then you can grow ice. And when the northern land gets a lot of summer sun, then you can melt ice. At the present time, we're sort of at a turning point where we'd go from having lost northern sun to switching to gaining northern sun. And so right now, not a lot of change is going on at all. The change over 10,000 to 100,000 years is fairly large. But over the time scales that we humans think of, it's not terribly big.
If we have accelerated ice melt in Greenland and Antarctica in just the last 5 to 10 years, the cause has to be what we're doing on the Earth.
It's fairly clear that the changes in Greenland and Antarctica are linked to warming in the regions that are changing. either warming of water under ice shelves that's melting them, that's letting things go faster, or warming on the surface. The temperatures in the polar regions reflect the global signal. So yeah, if you change CO2, it affects the poles as well as the equator. If you say that nature rolls the dice to see what the weather will be, we are making the die be loaded, and we're loading it towards warming, and then the warming comes up. But, you know, it might have come up a little warmer by itself.
Mm-hmm. But one way or the other, we're the ones contributing to the CO2 blanket around the Earth.
We are the ones that are contributing to loading the dice to make it warmer, yes.
When was the last time that Greenland did not have an ice cap?
I wish we knew the answer to that. Usual answer is that there's been ice on Greenland for 3 million years. It is just possible that it was smaller. There's fairly good evidence that it was somewhat shrunken about 120,000, 130,000 years ago. But the usual answer is about 3 million years.
Now, what about Antarctica?
Longest record so far in Antarctica, they probably pushed it past 800,000 years. It's very recently recovered. There's still analyses going on, and so the greenhouse gas record has only been published out to about 2/3 of a million years.
And in the million years, it has always had ice?
Yes.
And in the 2/3 of a million years that you've been able to look at CO2 levels in the Antarctic ice, has anything ever reached levels that we have now in our atmosphere?
No. The levels now are a bit above what nature was doing over that interval.
So for a million years, we haven't had this much CO2 around the Earth.
Over that time, we humans have pushed CO2 out of the band of natural variability, yes.
And it's supposed to double this century. I mean, we are really in uncharted territory then.
Certainly for the times that we humans have been here and sort of modern and knowing what's going on, we are changing things past what we've experienced, yeah.
Given the fact that you haven't been able to do ice cores past 2/3 of a million years, is there any estimate about when was the last time that Antarctica did not have any ice on the land there at all?
If you go back before the Oligocene, back to the Eocene, into the Cretaceous, the time of the dinosaurs or the Cretaceous, there probably was either no ice or very little ice on Antarctica.
So you have to go back at least 65 million years.
Yeah, actually, probably only about 35 or 30, something like that. Yeah.
If at the time of the dinosaurs there was no ice on Antarctica, and it's now, isn't it 2 to 3 miles thick in some sections?
Yes.
What would have caused that much ice buildup suddenly in land that had no ice 65 million years ago?
Yeah, the best explanation actually is natural changes in carbon dioxide. Continental drift, opening of passageways between continents may have contributed as well, but the best explanation is that nature has changed carbon dioxide slowly over a long time. The dinosaurs lived on a world with a lot of carbon dioxide, and that as a consequence, it was very warm.
And we're heading in that direction again now.
We're headed in that direction, yes.
When was the last time in your ice core work that you have found this much CO2?
No one has yet gotten an ice core long enough to find CO2 levels this high. So the ice core record now goes back almost 2/3 of a million years, and the record does not record anything as high as what we have now.
So when we go to the last interglacial period, which was how long ago?
About 125,000, 130,000 years ago was the previous interglacial.
What was the CO2 level then?
It was around 280. It's in that neighborhood, 280, maybe up towards 300, but not as high as today.
And you look at these numbers and where we are now, what is your reaction?
I think humans are changing the atmosphere in a way that's changing the climate.
And is it dangerous?
The question of danger really depends on what you're worried about and who you're worried about. And there have been a variety of attempts to assess how dangerous is dangerous. If you live very close to sea level in a place where you don't have a lot of bulldozers and a lot of money for building seawalls, there isn't much you can do, and it gets warmer and sea level rises, this is clearly not a good thing for you. Mm-hmm. And so there are some people that even very small changes can be dangerous to.
The estimate is 100 million people today live within 3 feet vertical rise from sea level.
There you go.
And if the projected sea level rise over the next decades is 3 feet approximately, then it means that we're going to be faced with literally global migrations away from the coastlines.
That would seem to be a reasonable presumption. If that many people are living there and the sea level comes up, they are going to have to do something.
Absolutely a nightmare, Linda, isn't it?
Georgia, it's really, as I've been investigating this over the last 3 weeks, it really has been dawning on me that we are past where it seemed to be psychologically, well, somewhere in 1,000 years, maybe there will be melt. You know, it was always way far in the future. It's now, it's in front of us. And as all of the scientists said to me, we really are at a point where we have to deal with behavior changes. What are we going to do with a rising sea level that is going to flood islands, flood nations like Bangladesh? Where are those people going to go as this, let's say, in just another 10 or 15 years? And another very, very important point in all this, the oceans have been taking in so much of the rising global temperature, 15 times the heat that land has been. Well, these warmer oceans are expanding. And as they expand, George, that is contributing currently to the sea level rise. And it also means that as the oceans are taking in this heat and they're becoming warmer, especially the Atlantic Ocean, then Katrina, as I said earlier, the hurricanes are linked to warmer temperatures on the ocean. And if we are in a multiple rising temperature in the oceans, rising temperature on the average global surface temperature, and that is accelerating melt on large masses of ice that is going into the land and further raising the sea level projections, we are now at a point where many scientists are saying we have to keep measuring, and in another 5 years, we may also have to be increasing sea level rise because nobody knows exactly how fast this feedback system between the ice melt in these big glaciers, the mountain glaciers are running off and most of them will be gone, and this warming in the ocean water itself, which is contributing to sea level rise and possibly the intensity of storms and unfortunately hurricanes. And where this all is beginning to come together is that Katrina has almost like lifted a veil to all of us about what could continue to happen in a variety of places in the future, not 1,000 years from now, but in the next few decades.
Yeah, or even right now, Linda. Even right now, I think we're going to go through this. He had a pretty sinister laugh there. How come? Well, you have one,
Richard
too.
Richard Alley has a great sense of humor. I have interviewed him 2 or 3 times over the last 10 or 15 years. And what's so interesting is each time, and I think that's part of the irony in his laugh, each time that I've interviewed him has been the question of how fast is ice going to melt? How fast is sea level rise? Where in the past have ice cores shown us that there can be a rapid turn of events in global climate? He has been one of the professors who has reported about this. And it has happened so fast in the past. And we are now, as he was saying, we are loading the die. And we are throwing them on the table as a human civilization with all of this carbon dioxide and methane. And I'm not sure that we are all, as a human family, grasping the implication that there is a projection that if we don't do something to curtail CO2 emissions, it could double yet again in the next 90 years. Well, doubling CO2 from already this 381 just measured parts per million volume is so high, and as he said, they haven't even found anything that high in nearly a million years in the ice core in Antarctica. What will happen? Because we're in uncharted territory, George. We are raising the blanket thickness about the Earth. We are having ice melting. The sea levels are rising. It's all happening at the same time.
We've got a guest, Robert Felix, who believes we're in an ice age right now, that it's just beginning. And he blames rising ocean current temperatures caused by undersea volcanoes. So a number of theories abound on this thing, Linda.
I don't think we're in an ice age, that's for sure.
Well, he says an ice age doesn't necessarily mean that you don't get warming. So somebody's going to be right. Stick with us. I tell you what we do. Linda Moulton Howe is on with us once a month for her one-hour report. But beginning today, I'm going to keep her on now for 2 hours whenever her reports are on. And we're going to call the second hour Conversations with Linda. So the phones are open. You can talk with her about earth changes, UFOs, crop formations, chupacabras, anything that Linda's investigated, the phones are open for you. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.